Let's do it.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Renegade HPG podcast. This is Travis, and my guest today is Chris Ings. Chris has been involved with the fan-made Clan Fox for several decades at this point, and we're going to be talking a little bit about what that is, the work that they do with their gaming group, and just Battletech in general. So, Chris, thanks for hopping on the podcast with me.
Thank you for having me on. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. You know, we got connected by our mutual friend, Robert Ash, who is over at Fortress Miniatures and Games, a sponsor of this channel. And he kind of pointed, and, you know, I looked into kind of what Clan Fox was online. For those listening, there is a website. It's just clanfox.com. You can hop on over and check it out. As a little bit of cool swag and merchandise. Looks like you guys got some, you know, custom dice and pens and patches and stuff. But, you know, I'm curious kind of a little about, you know, the origin and the backstory about this, because I know Robert said there was a lot there and some cool stuff, but I'm not super familiar myself other than just kind of glancing to the website. But, you know, maybe, you know, give me a little background on, you know, what's the origin story of this and kind of, you know, how long has it been around?
Okay, Clan Fox started in the mid-90s and was essentially my own personal group for Battletech. I trace its lineage all the way to one of the original MechForce North America signup sheets back before the status of all the clan names had been really solidified.
Okay.
I always point to, if you look at Day of Heroes, that particular source book, mm-hmm. in the last page there's a MechForce North America signup sheet. And there is, I believe, Clan Punisher, Clan Fox, and a couple of others that didn't actually make the cut afterwards.
Okay.
And some of the currently existing clans aren't there. Like Clan Sea Fox isn't there. They seem to have changed it. I guess it was too much canine imagery. But anyways, so I latched onto that and decided to just make it my own. And that's not the direction that FASA went. So this is completely fan canon, head canon.
Right.
But it's just been my own personal group and always running games under Clan Fox's banner since then.
Awesome. And it looked like you guys, you know, were involved in a lot of almost kind of outreach stuff in terms of getting out and doing a lot of kind of demo games and, you know, and even beyond Battletech, you know, in terms of the other gaming, it looked like there was a paintball team as well, you know, in addition to the gaming and sci-fi. Yep. And also kind of going to conventions and doing demos. Like, what kind of, talk to me a little bit about that kind of demo stuff, because I'm curious, you know, for especially as the game has really experienced a renaissance, you know, for those, you know, veterans out there that, you know, that enjoy kind of bringing in new players, you know, what's your experience been, you know, kind of on that front and kind of what works and what doesn't?
Well, the demonstration stuff all stemmed from the old FASA Marauder team, which was the demo team for FASA back in the day, the Fan Pro Commandos. Now it's the Catalyst demo team. I got my start there when I just turned 18, because it was the first time I could actually apply and actually be a Marauder, and the first time I went, like, Gen Con 2000, I think,
is the first
convention I went to. And going there, running Battletech, like, I don't think they even called it boot camp back then, but just running introductory games, just running Battletech under the auspices of the Marauders at that time. It was back in the old FASA time. So it was War, the Maelstrom, was just back then before FASA closed its doors, and Shadowrun, doing Shadowrun, but that was like before then. I'd even done it for like the RPGA back. I'm dating myself, but there have been a variety of games we've played under that. It's like all kinds of science fiction, a bunch of stuff from Palladium, Rifts, Robotech, because Robotech, Battletech, that's the whole thing. But the giant robots are always favored. There have been other role-playing events. There was a paintball team because just we had a logo. The logo looked cool. I thought, well, we're going to play some paintball. Well, I'm going to slap that on a patch, and we can just go and run your Clan Fox. So we did that.
Nice.
There's a bunch of pictures of that. Played paintball in years, but it was fun.
Yeah.
This was back in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah, I remember I only played paintball, I think, once. It was when I was a teen, and so it was very early in the day of paintball. And my outstanding memory is I didn't have a lot of money that time. I went with my friend, you know, and I got like this rental pump action paintball rifle, and it jammed like half the shots. And I remember like hiding in a forest and kind of having someone like, you know, come. I just like perfectly positioned myself. I was about to snipe this guy, took my shot, my paintball exploded my gun, and then I just got pelted. So I think I need to,
or something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was, gosh, that was probably like 95 or something like that. So, you know, I need to get back on a paintball course with some modern technology and enjoy it the way it's meant to me. But
Oh yes, electronically actuated and full automatic.
Yeah, definitely. Whole new world. It's like going to play war games with a Civil War or rifle. That was what I was doing back then. But are you heading to Gen Con this year? And you know, it's good to know that that's back up and running.
Gen Con this year, my own personal opinion on Gen Con this year is it's going to be Gen Con, but in name only. A lot of people have said it out. A lot of companies are sitting it out. I know Catalyst is going this particular year. Yeah. I've really been limiting my own demo activities locally to the local area, local game shops, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and last year nobody did anything.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to going next year though.
Yeah, I was listening. Team Covenant has a wonderful podcast, and they were talking, I think it was in their most recent one, about Gen Con and kind of how it's they were just kind of offering some insights on what it could be, at best case, worst case, and shifting in the best case to kind of being more vendor focused to more just kind of gameplay and community focused, which would be great because I think that's what we all need right now, is just to connect with other people in person again. But yeah, who knows? We'll see.
Gen Con became a spectacle. It became a giant, massive convention with just tons of people crowding downtown and like pageantry involved.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still games being played, obviously. But most people went for the dealer hall. Most people went for, a lot of people went for like special events, like True Dungeon stuff that you can't really play that many other places. There's big production value involved there.
Yeah.
So that's really the only place you can go and do it, because they also go to Bingo's Dragon Con and they sometimes go to Origins. But other than those three, True Dungeon doesn't show up a lot of other places because of just the amount of logistics involved in running that operation.
Right.
And so I get it.
Yeah. Well, this might be an opportunity to reset that back toward the player focus. I mean, almost everything's turned into that, whether it be, San Diego Comic Con, whatnot, is more of the vendor commercial side. But have you heard anything about MechCon, the one that Piranha runs? I haven't been to that yet myself.
I haven't had a chance to make it out to Vancouver for MechCon, but I know some people who have. It's a good time. I am enjoying playing MechWarrior 5 right now since it's come out on Steam and
is
now available widely, except of just an Epic, and having a good time so far. Found a few lads to get together and co-op our way through the Inner Sphere, and that's always a good time.
Definitely. Yeah, I've tied into my playthrough of Mass Effect now that Legendary Edition is back out, so that's where my video gaming is. I always got to be careful with video games. I get sucked in hardcore to it. So
You run out of hobby time because you're too busy playing video games.
I know, that's right. You gotta be selective. It's horrible. I want to do all the hobbies, but it's either I can produce some Renegade HVG content or go play MechWarrior 5. So hopefully people are enjoying the content, but. One of the things that was cool on the website that I saw, you guys got a lot of little custom mechs and stuff too. So tell me a little bit about what's come out of there in terms of, these, just kind of the things that you guys been able to make as your play group to kind of flesh out, what Clan Fox is.
So back in like the early 2000s, there was a internal version of the field manual just to pattern on the Battletech field manual is done for Clan Fox, just for personal edification, for group edification.
Yeah.
That's currently under a rewrite because it needs to be updated to like Jihad and beyond, because that hadn't happened yet when it was first written.
Yeah.
So in that book, we outlined four unique designs for Clan Fox, again, mirroring the other Battletech source books that have been released so far, as well as writing up some stuff for a couple of unique vehicle designs. Mm-hmm. Vehicle designs haven't been made yet, started with the mechs. But that's been a long, almost 15-year process to try and get those mechs created, because it went from initial concept, stat design, shopping, looking for an artist, doing art conceptual design. After that was the steps of finding a sculptor, finding a caster, getting the casting done, negotiating all that, and just the waiting involved in all of those steps. Any type of production like that is always more complex than first appearance.
Yeah.
And I am really glad I didn't kickstart any of them because there were significant production delays in several parts of that. And it's great to not have to, you know, look at anybody and say, I know I took your money, but it's coming, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's just a disconnect with between the general public and just what goes on behind the scenes of stuff. You see with the Kickstarter stuff, unfortunately, way too, I guess, is, you know, within a month or two from now. But yeah, it's hard as a vendor to kind of communicate expectations properly while still maintaining excitement, and hard for the customer to just realize just how crazy logistics get behind the scenes. But it's cool
even now with the current Black Knight, Plan Buster Black that. Knight that was that's just coming out. I mean, it disappeared. I wish Blaine and Brent all the best.
Yeah. Blaine did a great job with his. He did a little press release this morning that I saw, just talking about it and just saying that, you know, they had basically hit the reprint button, you know, a couple of weeks ago before it even kind of hit the shelves, and so there'll be another stock soon. But
and apparently a Stormcrow as well, if I recall the press release correctly.
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, I think that's great, you know, for great sign for the future of Battletech, especially with Catalyst being willing to kind of license out that stuff and allow, you know, other people to kind of take on that logistical challenge and kind of get that stuff out. But yeah, I'm very optimistic about kind of where Battletech is heading, you know, in the future. So, you know, hopefully it continues. Hopefully people get excited. Hopefully people are playing in game stores, you know, once they're able to do so. But yeah, the Black Knight, you know, it looks cool. I'll pick up one when it comes out.
It is wonderful seeing the Battletech Renaissance flower into existence. The local gaming scene, there is a healthy number of Battletech groups. There is a Michigan Battletech Network is a Facebook group that's available that has a listing of groups both on the west and east side of Michigan.
Yeah.
So out in Grand Rapids, Jackson, west side. That's a shout out to Jim Topa, who's the Catalyst demo team agent who runs games out there. He's fantastic. Charles Wilson, a little bit further north. He's also good. And then I typically run stuff here on the eastern side. And there's also even non-Catalyst aligned people also running games and Solaris matches, gladiatorial combat, and just regular scenarios and campaigns. It is a great time to be a Battletech player.
That's awesome. And what's, for people that are in that area, what's the name of that Facebook group?
That is the Michigan Battletech Network on Facebook.
Perfect.
And just ask, join that group if you're in Michigan or probably Southern or Northern Ohio or Northeastern Indiana.
Get there. I'm sure it's you know, Battletech's not a casual endeavor anyway. So, you know, set out a weekend, go play, you know, it's worth a little extra drive and expand that radius of influence there. Yeah, the it's been fun. I got back into it probably, about 2018, late 2018, early 2019, where I kind of, you know, dusted off my box of stuff that had been, I've been carrying around from house to house for 20 years or so. And yeah, it's obviously, it's been a blast. And kind of being able to kick off Renegade HPG with a little bit of the freedom that COVID gave me has been fun. And yeah, the good projects along the way, but we have some fun conversations coming up this summer. You know, kind of took it easy in May, but so we got some round tables coming up and some old creators again, you know, back in the 80s timeframe, you know, to connect with, but it'll be good. But it's good to see out there and even looking at the Facebook groups and kind of keeping people posted and active. It's very awesome. It's very awesome to see.
And the podcasts and all of the media is coming out in around Battletech is also one of the things I think is the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Things like your podcast, like back during the Dark Ages when there wasn't a lot of stuff going on. I don't know if you're familiar, but Fear the Boot. Dan Repperger, their main guy there, is also a huge Battletech fan. Would talk about Battletech, ran Battletech actual plays. Stuff like that. So that's a relatively long running RPG podcast now. They're over there doing that stuff.
What was the name of that again? Your mic cut out right when.
Oh, great. That is Fear the Boot.
Okay, Fear the Boot. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, they're out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
And they've been going for I think 10 plus years now.
Yeah.
Just a long time. They run a Fear the Con every year, only this year it's online as it was last year. And I've gone out there. I've actually flown out there to play to run Battletech for them. I ran them a Blood Name tournament. We came up with our own gag Blood Name for them.
That's awesome.
to compete over, and all the hosts and various people at the convention all gathered together, and I officiated a trial of Blood Rite for them under the official rules, and that was fun.
That's awesome. I definitely need to hop into that. I have such a remarkably small experience actually playing tabletop. You know, so much of my own, you know, vector of getting into BattleTech is through the novels and the lore and kind of the old video games back in the 90s when I was, you know, a teen. But you know, I picked up with friends and done small tabletop games, but yeah, just the idea of doing like a free for all or a blood name tournament or stuff, that sounds like tons of fun that I haven't, you know, had the pleasure to get in on yet.
So you came in through the video games like MechWarrior 2?
I didn't actually. My stepbrothers introduced me when I was really young. I was probably like 11, you know, maybe 12. And they would only visit during the summer, you know, and I picked up the game and then I just really enjoyed it, you know, and then I, you know, somewhere along the line, I was picking up like source books, like 3025 source books and the MechWarrior, original MechWarrior RPG. And spent most of my time just kind of building my own mechs and building my own MechWarriors that I never played with. And reading all the novels, you know, through my teens, you know, I've told this story a couple of times on the podcast, but I distinctly remember my eighth grade English teacher coming up to me and being like, Travis, your book report's really good, but I want you to do a different kind of book this time. Because it was like every week a new BattleTech book. And so I was immersed in the universe when MechWarrior hit, MechWarrior 2 hit. Actually, I was aware of MechWarrior 1, but my family didn't have a computer to run it. And then MechWarrior 2 came, and eventually I was able to get what I needed and lots of time playing MechWarrior 2, you know, and a little, and MechWarrior Mercenaries. And then I kind of started to drift out around MechWarrior 3. But MechWarrior 2 in the novels, you know, it's a lot of time spent in those things back in the day.
I always love telling the story about how I got into BattleTech. I sold a TurboGrafx 16 for my first BattleTech box. I was like 11 years old and taken ruthless advantage of by some guy at a music shop. Gave me like $20 for a TurboGrafx 16 back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't even quite enough, but I had seen it in Nintendo Power that they ran a BattleTech. It was around the release of the MechWarrior SNES game. Okay. A BattleTech contest, and one of the things you could win was the little boxed game that was the old third edition with the miniatures, and I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called around and I found a place that had it, and I ended up essentially hawking my TurboGrafx 16 to get BattleTech, and in reflection it was probably a good trade, but in the moment I could have probably done better than $20 for that TurboGrafx 16.
Yeah Well, it launched a lifelong hobby and love. So it's funny, kind of the little intro, little ways we connect with the things when we look back at it. But yeah, I was in second edition. You know, still have my second edition box, you know, sitting around here. But yeah, it was good stuff. Playing with the little cardboard standees. I didn't even play with a miniature on the table until like 2 years ago. Was the first time I'd actually, you know, before that it was cardboard standee or nothing.
So what was the first miniature you ever bought for BattleTech?
Centurion or Battlemaster. It was one of those two.
Centurion, I had a Battlemaster.
Yeah.
My first one was a blue blister Battlemaster, was the first battle miniature that I had, because I had the box set minis, the first one I bought.
Yeah. That's such a cool stance. And the weight on that mech is good. I like the weight of the old metal mechs, but you know, some of the old metal ones kind of questionable, but the Battlemaster, it holds up. And yeah, the Centurion was kind of a favorite line art by Luce back in the day, and probably my favorite mech, probably because I really enjoyed Mike Stackpole's books back then, and you know, obviously with Yin Lo Wang, and then the Valkyrie. You know, those were the three mechs that I really enjoyed the look of, and I have those. I still have those three miniatures. They're behind me. You can
totally tell I'm a clan player because my first books were Way of the Clans.
You know, that
Way of the Clans
might be my first. My first
Blood Name and Falcon Guard.
Yeah.
And so I was introduced to the clan mechs almost first. Almost. I mean, I had the box set mechs, but as far as the novels, those are the first ones because it was a 24-hour supermarket, Meijer, for anybody who knows it up in this area in Michigan, was a 24-hour supermarket that had a book section, had the old Rock paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so some BattleTech novels would pop up in there. And My mother would go shopping. I would sit in the little cafe area in the front because she was going shopping and that was boring. And I was 12 or 13 and I would just read. It was between reading BattleTech novels and The Far Side, because they'd have the
Nice.
Far Side collections of Barry
Yeah.
Larson back in the
Yeah.
day. And between those, I would just take those. I would get like a $1 pop with free refills from the overnight counter. And she could like shop for 2 hours just wandering the store. And I'd be like, God, it was time to go already.
Yeah.
Best times.
I think the cover art for Way of the Clans, I think, is possibly the best cover art, for getting non-BattleTech people into BattleTech. It's just a really cool cover art to be
And
like,
that's the cover with the guy hiding from the dire wolf. Like he's hiding in the
exactly.
ruins with that dire wolf stalking by.
Yep. Yeah, it's just really like if you look, you look at the old, even Wolves on the Border, the old Warrior trilogy, cover arts, it's their quality, there's some quality art there, but in terms of like capturing the imagination, there have been some great covers since Way of the Clans, but I think as far as looking at those early ones, I think that stands out. And
Well,
the Grey Death Legion has some good, that Locust, cover art
Decision
is
on
good one.
Thunder Rift, I was going to bring that up because
Yeah.
that is good cover art. When you're talking about 80s and 90s BattleTech art, it is definitely hit and miss.
Oh,
So,
totally.
yes. So
Once the cartoon came out and you had those kind of God, I forgot who the artist was that did a lot of kind of the blocky stuff, but yeah, once they started plastering that number one animated series and then had the kind of low budget art on front, there was definitely a turn. But no, the way of Clans was a highlight,
They're
for
good
quite.
paintings. They're
And
good paintings.
yeah, you mentioned the Day of Heroes source book. That cover art is great. That's the Boris Vallejo. I mean, Boris is an exceptional fantasy artist anyway, but that's a very good, one of my favorite cover arts as well. But yeah, we had Walden books, was where I would always, get my BattleTech books, the Walden books back in the day, which I think has faded into memory. At least it has up in Massachusetts where I'm at. But yeah, same thing. Lots of times I would always love getting into go into the bookstore and I would see if there was a new BattleTech book out, because for those youngins out there, you didn't know if a new BattleTech book was coming out until you went to the store and you saw something new on the shelf that you hadn't seen before. But
If you were really clever and your parents wouldn't take you or whatnot, you'd call and you could ask. And
yeah,
that way,
there
if you
you
thought to do it, you were hoping to get that trip out there so you could come and see for yourself.
Yeah, good times back then. But yeah, the swag that you guys got on your website is cool. The between the Dyson patch and the enamel, I like those enamel pens, especially with the new Kickstarter ones that came out. I need to get some of those for Renegade HPG. How do you get those? Where do you contact to get all that kind of that
Well,
pen
there
and the
are a
dice?
variety of Chinese companies you can contact to get a lot of that stuff done. A lot of them
Yeah.
have like Western friendly interfaces that you can use to make the orders or intermediaries. Those were made through wizard pins, which you will sometimes see advertised here and there. I do not remember where I saw the advertisement for them, but I was like, swag's probably cool.
Yeah.
And I like the Pell pins. Yeah, they turned out nice. I also actually have upgraded dice as well beyond the dice that are available on the site. Had a limited run done of the aluminum pucks,
Okay. Oh,
the way the
sweet. Yeah.
catalyst did.
I've seen those.
Those
I've
are
seen those on
available
the
on
Facebook
those are
group. Yeah.
yeah, that's on Instagram. Those are not for sale, unfortunately.
Gotcha.
Those are a limited run for friends and family of the clan. But ever see them in the wild, you
Well,
know
if you get
it's
a
an
ton of
OG.
yeah, if you get a ton of friend requests on Facebook, all of a sudden you'll know
The
why. what kind of like order quantities, for those out there, including myself, like looking for that, like when you're ordering those, like what do you have to invest as kind of the minimum to get a good run?
pins.
Yeah, for any of it.
Yeah, so most places you go want like a minimum order quantity between 50 and 100.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends completely on the individual seller, the manufacturer, and what their policies are. The one that I found was you could do a minimum run of 50.
Okay.
And of course, economy of scale, the per unit price gets better the more you buy.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, definitely cool. I had put out a little thing for on the Renegade HPG social media about shirts and seeing what people liked for that. So I still need to kind of get contact. It's
oh,
hard
yeah.
to find.
Speaking of shirts, I mean, we got that too. I mean, this is actually, I am wearing a shirt in honor of the completion of the mech project. There's a little bitty picture of one of the mechs here and a much bigger logo on the back.
Sweet.
That's actually on the Clan Fox Facebook page, as you can see that particular design. The Balgare design team.
Yeah.
That was a version of that shirt is going to be made available eventually. There was a run done with the actual logo on the sleeve.
Nice.
Which were given to everybody who participated. The sculptor, the artist, everybody who was involved with that got one of these shirts. There will be another version of it without the arm logo.
Right.
That will be made publicly available later.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, remember clanfox.com. You know, swing on over there for some cool stuff, guys. But yeah, and I got this. I got my Herb X from Elden. You know, I'm looking forward to the next Marauder shirts that come out.
I tried to get a commission from him.
Yeah.
But he is way too busy now.
He is. Yeah.
Texas money is too good.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah, I tried to get a little bit before see if he could help out with the Renegade HP way back before I had any Patreon income, and he was able to start something for me. He was going to help out, and then all of a sudden the real pain work came in. But no, maybe I can stack him now that there's actual like Patreon money coming in. Get something cool.
Neat things about the BattleTech Renaissance is you're getting more people coming in. You're getting more artists saying, "Hey, I can draw that."
Definitely.
And the thing that we need is good technical artists, because whenever you're talking about drawing mechs, it is much different than drawing a organic or human form. And as long as you know how to draw straight lines, which is unfortunately one of the worst things to try and draw, but as long as you can draw straight lines, you have a great future in drawing giant robots.
Yeah. Well, you're preaching to choir. I mean, that's I set up the Gallery 3025 to kind of hunt down and find artists, ideally outside of BattleTech, or artists that have done a little bit in BattleTech but aren't quite mainstream, and kind of get some work out of them and trying to get some visibility in. And so where I pulled in Jaden Morris, who did a couple pieces of a pair of Bushwhackers and then some Lobos, that you can find online, but not that much, but both very high quality pieces. And he's done a lot of the paint schemes, which turned out to be some of my favorite paint schemes on Unit Color Compendium. And so really talented by that, has very little stuff in there. And so we're working with him right now to do an archer, basically getting some field repairs, after a major battle, as an artwork. And yeah, we've had great response from the community and supporting the gallery there. It's basically just trying to get as many people as we can, chip in $2, and then use that money to basically bring in artists. The idea is to try and find some concept artists, some people kind of working outside of BattleTech, but in the sci-fi or mecha genre, and see what they can do with BattleTech, so yeah, you're preaching to choir. I'm trying to get more in there, and certainly with Bruins, we got some MechWarrior Bulldogs, published, over the finish line, which is cool. I'm actually I'm commissioning a piece with Bruins now for myself, which I'll share on the Renegade HD Patreon. But yeah, it's fun. It's that visual medium, man, that the artists do a great thing for BattleTech. So, it's been cool to kind of, talk to those people and see more coming out of them. Now it's becoming more popular.
We still have design work to do too. There's some vehicles to design. So I need to find a vehicle designer. Fortunately, some of the best are booked up. Yeah. Like,
well, I saw Dale Ida on Twitter yesterday. He was fishing for some work, basically saying, if you got money, I got time to make you stuff. So he does some good modeling. So he might be a good one to reach out to.
I'll have to write that down. Remember that for later. If you could send me a reminder after this is done.
Definitely I'll do that. Yeah, I reached out to Dale too about hopping onto a roundtable, as we get coming up. So we'll have him on the podcast as well. But a lot of fun stuff there. But cool. What's in your group there? How many? You said it was pretty vibrant. How many people do you got playing?
It depends on whoever shows up in any given. We've had as many as 10 players show up. And sometimes it's just 3 people show up. It depends on what's going on, what we're doing. We've run you know, multi-part campaign game. We've run individual scenarios. Some of it has to do with Clan Fox. Some of it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's just Clan Fox is my pet project as far as the Battletech entity goes, which is kind of different from the gaming organization because that's just like playing games. So yeah, all sorts of people. It started with just the core of like my family and a few close friends. Mm-hmm. And then it's, and any given weekend, it's whoever shows up at the table can be part of the clan.
Awesome. Well, what are some kind of favorite campaigns that you've run? You know, what kind of storylines or, you know, maybe battles, you know, any battle stories that have really kind of resonated with you as, you know, top experiences?
Let's see.
Give us your war stories, Chris.
Oh, boy. There are a few. Let me think about them. There have been several mercenary campaigns because those are the easiest to run and the most fun. You get the most eclectic mix of units and whatnot when you go traipsing across the inner sphere as mercenaries. Everybody picks up a mercenary handbook at some point, one of the mercenary manuals, and starts reading through it and making their own unit and coming up with all that kind of stuff and their own dropship and handling logistics and getting lost in the minutia of figuring out every last round of SRM ammo. So we've done like runs. I like the Free Rassel Hog Republic. And they didn't like mercenaries too much. So playing along the Steiner Rassel Hog border, harassing back and forth and local systems who are just busy enough, because most of them are worried about the Cretans, that just let them go and didn't like it too much. So, having to play both sides against the middle, that was a pretty fun campaign because, you're always worried about finding the Steiner Scout Squad, with your Rassel Hog heavies and, right. That's never a good time for anybody, except the Steiners. So those have been some fun ones. Playing with artillery, quite often, especially in campaign games, I will be the game master. So I'm just running Op 4. And so I will, I can sometimes abstract the artillery rules a little bit from rules as written, basically to make them play a little better and make them just a little easier to get your head around rather than dealing with the complex scatter and whatnot.
Tell us, what are some of your kind of, you know, insider tips there, you know, how to make artillery a little bit more easy and fun?
I took a lot of stuff from just because we play miniatures rules. So typically it's not going on to taking place on a hex map.
Okay.
So in order to handle that, handling stuff like scatter, I actually took a page from the old war, the Maelstrom, game. And so when you're dealing with scatter after you've made your strike roll and it misses to scatter, you just roll a D10. The D10's arrowhead top serves as the direction of scatter, and the value on the D10 is the distance of scatter. So it can scatter up to 10 inches, or like you say, you just missed by one, it scatters half that distance, so up to 5 inches away from the target point. And that's just a really quick and easy way of not having to put a hex base down and figure out which hex facing and then go that many inches out. It's just, and it's more granular because that arrowhead can face just about any direction.
Yeah.
When it gets dropped on the table. I always thought that was an interesting scatter mechanic and pretty useful.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, you know, playing on miniature rules as opposed to the hex, just because of that flexibility. Even just with something as simple as turning, you know, where you weren't fixated on turning kind of just a hex. If you wanted to turn half a hex, you know, you could turn half a hex. You know.
Yes, and like the inch lateral move when you're taking a move, having that wiggle room is also extremely useful.
Yeah.
Because you just want to be able to inch over a little bit, but not have to pay for it. You get that inch of drift you can make without there being a problem with it.
Yeah. It was good. It was, so I am excited to kind of get some games in on a lot of the new Hex Max that Catalyst has come out. They have some pretty cool stuff. I didn't go
all too... the neoprene stuff.
Yeah, the neoprene stuff. I didn't go too crazy on hex maps because I went a little crazy on the miniatures, you know, but hopefully.
Went in way.
Well, I think that's true of everybody, but but yeah, I ended up going in double what my original was, but a lot of miniatures came out of it. So, and
well, I say is my wife raised her eyebrows and was like, well, bills are paid, roof is replaced, got the money.
Yeah.
Do it.
Well, I endeavor to keep a zero net expense sheet for my hobby. So when stuff comes in, it has to go out. Fortunately, there's some things that are, you know, the collectible market has gone crazy the last year and a half, and so it's easy to kind of let go of old stuff, you know, for enough money to pay for the new stuff. But
that's a lesson I need to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends. I've definitely got more things sitting in this room than I need to. This is kind of the master bedroom in the house we use as my office and hobby room. So a lot of space. I never really did get the whole like using your bedroom as your biggest room. I was like, oh, you're just sleeping in there. You know, you're doing other stuff in other rooms. But
that's a good point. Although I have a relatively spacious basement office, which you can probably tell by the decor behind me and the lighting.
Yeah.
My hobby desk is behind me.
Yep. Same, yeah. I'm hiding the multitude of miniatures on my desk back there. You know, lots primed, very few with a base coat, and maybe one or two that are actually painted. But we all have aspirations, you know, to paint. But
well, you know, miniatures painters can never die until they've painted their last miniature, which makes all of us immortal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was very fortunate. I connected with 1N51 on Twitter when he posted this. It's really amazing Timberwolf that he had painted. That was a homage to the Timberwolf loadout poster from the Kickstarter.
Yep.
By Marco and yeah, I reached out to him. I'd never gotten a commission before, and I reached out to him and he actually offered to paint a lance, you know, as thank you for what I was doing to Renegade HPG, and then for the other stuff we just traded, you know, I sent him a bunch of extra product, you know, and kind of in exchange for painting some other stuff. And so I'm you know, he's been posting a lot of that on his Twitter, and you know, he's a very talented painter, so it'll be cool to kind of get those back and get them on the table.
I've been painting mechs for like 20 some odd years, and I still look at some people who come up into the hobby and go,
yeah,
how do you do that? I can't do that yet. So like when I had the miniatures done, like I have some that I've painted for myself, because of course I do, of course I painted for myself.
Yeah.
But I also, for, you know, showing them off and showing them other people and getting good promotional stills to say, hey, this is what they look like.
Yeah.
I also went out and had commissions done. Zach at Zombie Brush Studios, who streamed on Twitch, I give him a shout out as well, because he's a great guy. And he did up all four of the current Clan Fox mechs. And those are the actual pictures. If you go to the website and actually see the pictures of the painted miniatures, those are his.
Awesome.
His work.
What are those tags again? Give them a little extra attention for the shout out if people are interested.
That is Zombie Brush Studios
on
Twitch. And he streams most days.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been, you know, I follow Squidmar, has a great email, has a great YouTube channel there with Squidmar. And I like his where he goes to Fiverr and kind of commissions a lot of people to do paint. I want to do that for Renegade HPG this fall. I think there's probably like a 4-month setup for getting those like sent out and painted to come back to produce the video. So I want to hop on that. But I thought that'd be a cool thing to do for BattleTech as well, is kind of, you know, pick 5 or 10, you know, people on Fiverr, you know, that do miniature painting, and just send them some mechs and see what they come back with. I think that'd be a fun video to make out there. And even I've been not even going through Fiverr, but just kind of finding people in the BattleTech community and send them out a way to kind of drive some attention to them so they get some commissions.
Before I got really big on Fiverr, I recall there was, I have done other commissions in the past, somebody who painted up an entire company of Capellans for me.
Nice.
Because I need more Op4 to shoot at. Everyone shoots at Capellans. Painting Capellans, so I need somebody to do this for me.
Yeah, awesome.
I can't remember what that service was, though. I think it enough Fiverr has risen up and people are just doing it on Fiverr.
Yeah. Yeah. The favorite mech I painted is a Leo mech. It's a Red Lancers. Really cool looking paint scheme, and also very beginner friendly paint scheme, because it's all, you know, straight lines. You know, there's not too much shading and stuff needed. So it came out really good. It required a novice level of paint skill and a lot of patience. But yeah, that was fun. But yeah, there should, there's a lot of talent. And as you said, with the Renaissance and more people coming in, we're just going to get more artists, more creators, you know, more painters in there, because Warhammer definitely has some painting talents up on the rest of us. You know, they have a big community too, but yeah, they're out there. We can all learn from each other. One of the, I did ask, Oliver, you know, the 1 in 5 1. I really got to memorize what it is. I think it's 1 in 5 1 on Twitter, who actually just got selected as a Camo Specs painter. So shout out to him for that. I had him do a version of that Marco Timberwolf for me, that Clan Wolf Beta Galaxy. And he recorded the entire painting process that I now have the files. And now I just got to edit to be like a painting tutorial that I'll post up on Renegade HPG. But yeah, you know, I know there's some other good painting tutorials out there too, but it's some of them are a little bit too edited. You know, I'm like, I was like, I can't, your video is only 20 minutes long. I'm guessing that there's more to it. So this one will actually be like the entire paint process. You know, people can fast forward or skip through if they want, but it'll be there if they want it. You know, so for me as a novice painter that doesn't know what he's doing, I was like, this is what I would need. You know, give me a step by step. Let me know exactly what I'm going to do, what brush I use, what color paint to use.
That's actually something that thinking of doing on either the site or on the Facebook, is adding some of my own painting tutorials, because I do a lot of camouflage, and camouflage can be a pain in the butt, and to make it look right, especially at scale. And I've gotten to the point where I'm good at it on Instagram. Yeah. I have a few pictures of those, and adding videos of that and like explaining the theory behind it, breaking up outline, color selection, all that kind of stuff.
Well, as a novice painter, I'll tell you, like, it's needed. You know, and there are painters out there listening. You know, detailed tutorials is like the problem is that when you do the tutorials, like the experts kind of they undervalue the things that are obvious to them at the time. And I mean, I'm essentially a teacher by trade, you know, and an athletics coach. And so I understand that, you know, you got to be really careful that the things that are automatic for you, that you don't assume are automatic for the people that you're teaching. And a lot of the painting stuff out there is just edited down to kind of short stuff, and kind of like some of the little things are cut out, you know. And I'm like, be as, you know, with those tutorials, be as detailed as possible. People always, and if you put the timestamps on it, people can skip forward if they want to. It was like, oh, I know how to prime this, you know, I'll move on. But, you know, when I first started, I was like, how do I prime? You know, it was like, what's the best thing to use for primer? Like, I didn't know, like, you know, you should avoid certain temperatures or humidity levels and stuff like that, you know, things that people take for granted. And so if people are doing tutorials, man, get into the weeds with it. It'll really help the people who are coming in with no clue, like myself. But yeah, we need more of them out there. So this is my thumbs up for you getting some painting tutorials.
Yeah, because back in the day, if you don't prime correctly, it gets all grainy, and that's not a good time for anybody.
Yeah, it's no fun. So tell me, you mentioned a little bit before about the process of creating those mechs. You know, I know when we were talking about, you know, what, you know, the Clan Buster and stuff, but you have a lot of mechs on your website too, as well. And you kind of mentioned how long the process was. So you must have put a lot of work into, because I think there's what, half dozen or so mechs on the site?
There's one in each weight class. The lightest, I mean, it all has a fox theme because, and fox, obviously. But
yeah.
The lightest one is the Shadow Fox, 35 tons. Then we have the Red Hunter at 55 tons. There's a Rabid Fox at 70 tons, and the Balgare at 90.
Nice. And do I remember seeing a quad there? I know there's a quad on your shirt.
That's the Balgare. Okay. That is the Assault, the 90 ton. There's a big turret on top of it. Put some antenna on it. Looks like a main battle tank got foil lights.
Nice. I like it. And those, and if people, those can, they can check that on your website too. Is that on Fortress Miniatures and Games as well?
That is also available on Fortress.
Awesome.
Right now they have the entire line.
Perfect. Yeah. So people head on to fortressminiaturesandgames.com and, you know, pretty much anything you need for BattleTech, you know, in production or out of production. But yeah, so you got the Clan Fox mechs there, and can they get like the patch and the pen and the,
Yep, those are all available there as well. The patches, pins are available either through our site directly or from Fortress.
Very cool.
And the files for BattleTech, and they are sold as mecha miniatures.
Okay.
Because I don't want to step on anybody's toes.
Yeah.
But there will be rules and stats for other 6mm miniatures games, because those are convertible to just about anybody's stuff. Hard War that the guys at Strato do.
Right,
they can be used in Cav or any other science fiction 6mm scale game.
Very cool. And you got record sheets out there that people can pick up with them?
Those are available on the site right now for BattleTech currently, and more games as deconversions are done.
Gotcha. And what era are those mechs from?
Those mechs, in as far as the fictional canon universe goes, is they start in the 3050s and okay. end in the 3060s. So the okay. Algar, which is the Assault and the last design that gets made, is 3062 production.
Gotcha. Are those all Omnimechs or are they battle mechs?
They are all Omnimechs. Nice. Built this clan, and again, in the fictional universe, Clan Fox is hiding out all the way around the Davian side of space, having to escape the clans because the way they're written in, or the way I dovetail them into the existing canon before I veer off into my fan stuff, was back at the time of the Dracoon Compromise around the year 3000, mm-hmm. when Clan Coyote had to deal with its scandal, but it was they had a significant scandal. They became much lessened, which is why they weren't a big player after that, because they'd been in the Golden Century previously. Clan Coyote, the inventors of the Omnimech, were one of the big clans to deal with, one of the bigger Warden clans. So instead of them just losing essentially half of their strength because they excised it, it just became Clan Fox and ended up retreating to a abandoned Star League outpost in the periphery, deep periphery of the Davian side sphere. So
I love imagining what's going on in the periphery. Just people that have just kind of like snuck away and kind of made their own little home without people knowing. You know, that's where the explore side of my imagination goes there. You know, what's out there. But I think that'd be a cool novel. I know, you know, everyone and their mother got canon characters, but I bought mine before I realized there would be another 8,000 people doing it.
you see, I got canon characters in my thing, but I didn't use them.
Yeah,
I didn't use them because, like, after I've spent so much time building my own faction and building my own headcanon, mm-hmm. I just can't imagine myself fitting in anywhere else.
Fair. Yeah, there's the kind of glitched on mine, and so it didn't quite, it, like, accepted the survey before I had finished the survey, and so so I need to follow up with them. I try to follow up with them, you know, early in the 2019 early 2020 time frame, but the customer service, the response time wasn't that great back then, but yeah, because I had gotten the one with the that has a picture with it, and I had like basically just logged in and put my name and put like a quote. And then I've been like, oh, this is, I don't have time for this. I'll do it later. And then they just accepted that, you know, even though I didn't click on the send. So I need to go back. Hopefully the fact that it doesn't actually have a picture and I paid for a picture, that they won't just grab it before it's ready.
But well, it's going to be ongoing for a while yet still, because that technically we got two. And when my wife found out I wasn't using them, it's like, well, I want to use them.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. Okay, you can have a Jade Falcon.
Oh, that's a love-hate relationship there. Yeah. You're funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is an Aiden Pride fanboy or fangirl, fair. I guess. So. Fair.
Yeah, Aiden's a funny one because it's, you know, he's like the first big clan character, but he's as the whole point of is he's not clan. He's a not clan clan guy. You know, our anti-clan guy, but no. Yeah, I enjoyed Aiden, you know, as a rebel type character myself, but yeah, I know a lot of people just think he's a little stale.
And your wife's favorite character was Aiden. Kind of what's your favorite novel? What's your favorite character and story in the BattleTech universe?
Oh, wow. That's actually a great question. My favorite story in the BattleTech universe, ones I have read so far.
How far have you read?
I read everything up to the Dark Age.
Okay.
I read the first few in the Dark Age. And then I kind of fell off the wagon because I won't say Grognard because I didn't hate it. I actually played a little bit of Click Tech to make sure I didn't like it. I even went and placed at Nationals. So I made sure I had played it, and I played it to a level where it was like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But
you gave it a fair shot.
Yeah. So placed 21st that year at Nationals. So not too shabby, but anyways, after that I was like, But I did pick back up again now that they are dovetailing that back into the main Battletech storyline, essentially, and they're making that a continuity. So I did read Blaine's most recent. I read Hour of the Wolf. And I'm roaming back to read a few of the previous ones before then. There's a setup to get the drive into the Ilkhan era. But I'm probably going to have to go with a very pedestrian pick and go with some of the Stackpole novels, like the main Warriors of Kerensky trilogy is always good, with also special nods to a few things like Bread for War. I Am Jade Falcon in some places. The Jump Jet to the Face death for Natasha Kerensky is a head scratcher. But sure, I guess. I mean, something's got to get you eventually.
Right. Somebody finally helped me find contact information for Bob Thurston, and I reached out, but I didn't hear anything back from him. So maybe I'll try again. He's one of the few of those original authors that I haven't talked to. But it was funny listening to Stackpole talk about the death of Kerensky, how he was like, when it came up, he was like, not touching it. Hands off. Someone else can do it.
Speaking of which, there's this other thing. I can definitely tell you which Battletech novel I thought was the worst.
Okay.
And it is not Far Country. They can stop with that whole business about, you know.
It was goofy, but I didn't think it was that bad. Yeah. Have you I don't know if you're connected with George Ledoux on YouTube, but he has a video there where he does a narration for Far Country. I'll find it. I'm not going to spoil it. It's amazing. I'm going to put it down in the comments below. And so if people want to catch that, or not in the comments, in the description, if people want to catch that George Alito narrating Far Country, it's amazing. But yeah, far, not that bad. I know we talked to Blaine. I know what Blaine's, you know, least favorite Battletech novel is, but
mine,
what's yours?
It's with absolutely no disrespect to the author. But Grissman's The Dying Time.
Okay.
The way they took out the Grey Death Legion in that fashion, I understand them thinking that, you know, we need to change. They can't win all the time. They've got to go eventually. But Keith wasn't allowed to do it. Probably didn't even want to do it. But you should be able, I believe it was a line in one of his other novels. You need to be able to shoot your own dog. And they brought Griezmann, I'm sorry, I'm just pronouncing his name. I believe it's Thomas Griezmann.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Right. No disrespect to him. I have read other novels of his in Battletech that were good. In this particular novel, it felt to me like he was brought in as a paid hitman.
Well, I have a little backstory of that because I've connected with Bill Keith. And we were close to getting him on the podcast. And then I actually dropped the ball because I wanted to reread his novels because I hadn't read them in 20 years before I got him on. And then I haven't read anything since. So hopefully he'll accept my apology when I come back and be like, I finally reread the stuff so I can actually talk with fresh memory. but yeah, there's a little background in that, suffice to say, Bill wasn't too happy with how the Grey Death Legion went out either. But yeah,
it made me sad. It was the only book I've ever destroyed.
Yeah, really. Well, it was interesting because whenever I talk to an author, I talk about, I ask that question of kind of what it's like to kind of write other people's characters and have other people write your characters. And most of the answers so far have been kind of diplomatic, but I just feel like if I was in there and I invested so much time into kind of building character of the Grey Death Legion, for instance, and Grayson, that you'd want to be consulted, but it does seem to be so freelance and so partitioned between the writing, and it kind of goes through the steering the story, drivers, which are not the authors, that'd be tough. I mean, you look in a universe like Star Wars and it's so vast and there's so many people, contributing to it, and so you just you can't have the same person writing the character all the time. That's a weird thing to think about, as someone who is creative myself, I feel like I would just be too proprietary with, my characters, if I was writing. I was like,
shared universes in particular, it's a thorny problem.
Yeah.
You have both the creative impulse for wanting to keep the control because of the creative process, and it never really stops. The creative process, once it starts, keeps on going, and you keep on thinking about it, you keep on revisiting it. Even if you've put it down for years, you'll come back to it with new perspective and new understanding and new ideas, and approach it in a different manner. Yeah. And you're like, well, we could do this with it, and then this would happen, and then you could do this other thing. And with shared universes, it's not, it's harder to keep it. That impulse is still there, but there are times when it's destructive or counterproductive to try and indulge it as much as you might like to. Because as when a bunch of people can feel like they have ownership of it, even if they really don't, they feel like they do, then that is where you get the personal investment, and that's where you get, well, the people who spend way too much money on it.
Yeah.
And way too much time and love everyone.
That's what we need. We got a passionate community. You guys listening are great. So yeah, it'll be fun to see kind of where things go in these next few years. More stuff, more minis, more games, more versions.
Looking forward to it this next month. I get to open gigantic boxes of stuff. Catalyst, because I went for Wave 2 shipping. So everything.
Oh, you got all your Wave 1. Wow.
So everything, Wave 1 and Wave 2. And I'm probably, I don't know, I might even make a video for it or something. Just clear off the entire gaming table and just have a Loki or Thor Ragnarok moment. Behold my stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, people love unboxing videos, man. I just did it casually, when I got my Wave 1 stuff, and that video exploded. And I was like, oh, well, I'll do another one. And that one exploded. And then I did one more. And then I was like, these are not what I'm passionate about, of opening boxes. So I got three in, but no, people love them, appreciate them. I did it mainly for
the unboxing, and I want to follow it up with like what I paint everything as. It's like, here's my regiments, here are my clusters.
Yeah,
because I have like two clusters of Clan Fox. I want to fill out the rest of the Tumen eventually and just get like the entire thing out there. And then I can do a great big photo spread of like, here is the entire clan, a raid order of battle style.
Yeah, well, I think you definitely, people got to get out of just the, here's my box, I'm going to open it. There's got to be something to it. Like for me, it was, I was doing a scale comparison between the new ones and all of the old ones. And then I actually, I stopped both because I was getting less enthusiastic for that kind of video, but also like I no longer had old versions of all the new ones that I could use for scale comparison. But yeah, I think, because that was the question, I think when people came out, I was like, what is the scale? Like, how does it compare?
It didn't shrink, it actually expanded slightly. It went from 1/285th to like 1/267th or something like that.
Yeah, 265, I think, but yeah, it might be 267, but yeah, a little bit, but at least it's consistent. Like I said, it's cool how they do it. And talking to Anthony, it's basically by volume. Now that everything is 3D, that can do it, basically just kind of do it by volume and mass.
The kind of funny thing about the Clan Fox mechs is compared to that, they are slightly overscaled for their weight.
Okay,
but they are consistent between each other.
Okay, there you go. Some consistency. The consistency doesn't really kill me on the tabletop, because how often are you like, I'm playing on the tabletop and all my mechs are right next to each other? Oh, they're like spread out, so. I also, for me, it's more important having unique looking miniatures for the same mech than having the right scale. Like I'd rather, like if I was going to have a Griffin, I'd rather have an old, an old Ral Partha, a Gashapon, from the old Dugrim series, new Griffin.
Or the old Battle Droids one that was like a half pound of lead.
There you go. You can do that too. But yeah, just have like a different, like a mech that actually looks different than the other ones. That's more important to me, even if the scale is a little bit off. But, to a degree, like I love the Kids Logic, the new ones. I mean, you breathe on them and they break, they're extremely fragile, in the resin, but the skull quality is wonderful. And yeah, just having like, okay, well, I have a rifleman from Kids Logic. I have a rifleman from Ral Partha. I have a rifleman from Catalyst. They all look a little different, that's cool. I like it. So, but anyway, well, cool. Well, thanks, Chris. This has been fun. I'll wrap it up for everybody here. And this is fun. So definitely check out clanfox.com and see what Chris and his gang have been up to there. You can pick up some cool little Clan Fox swag if you're an ultra Battletech collector, or hop on over to Fortress Miniatures and Games and pick up some Clan Fox stuff, as well as pretty much anything else you need from Catalyst Game Labs, or from FASA, or from Strato Miniatures. Anybody and everybody contributing to Battletech, you know, you can find it over at Fortress Miniatures and Games. So do that. And Chris, thanks a lot. This has been fun. I appreciate you sharing your time this afternoon with me and the rest of these Battletech fans listening.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.